Welcome to Culture, Talent, and Growth. Join Anish Shah and the Ruckus team as they invite dynamic leaders to share what they've learned about creating lasting culture, attracting great talent, and achieving sustainable growth. Let's get started.
Amazing, Fran. Well, thanks so much for taking time to chat with us today. And for those kind of in our audience who might not be too kind of educated about secondaries, we'd be able to give a brief explanation of kind of how they work and a little bit more info on the fund.
Yes, it's Nordic Secondary Fund, a Danish fund that we funded three and a half years ago. A bit more info on the fund, maybe just on secondaries first. Secondaries is, you can say, an asset class of its own, where we actually not put new money into the companies, but we buy, you would say, old shares from existing investors, all founders in the company. So we don't bring money into the company. We bring liquidity out for some of those who has been with the company for a while. The market in the US is big in Europe, and we are maybe the first one who's actually done this focused on secondaries. And what we do is that we actually buy secondaries in selected companies, not portfolios of companies. So that is what secondary is about. And then the fund started, we got the idea for 4 years ago. I've been buying secondaries from, you can say, some of the guys that I've invested with, some of the founders that I've founded companies with for many years, 15 years or something like that. But those ticket sizes became bigger and bigger and bigger. So it became too big for my own pocket. And then Peter and I agreed that we should either build a marketplace for this kind of secondaries, or we should build a fund. The marketplace was difficult because there is a lot of, you can say, calculations in regards to asset classes. There was a big difference between different asset classes in the company, so it was not so easy to make a standard product. So we agreed to do a fund, and we started Nordic Secondary Fund actually the day after I turned 50 3 years ago. We started with the fund one, which is a 50 million euro fund, and started investing out of that fund 3 years ago. It was fully invested 2 years later, and then we started fund number two, which is approximately a 90 million euros fund, and we are now investing out of that fund. We have invested around 30% of that fund now, and it's allocating the rest over the next two and a half years.
Amazing. Congrats on sort of all the success you've had so far. So who are you usually transacting with? I think you briefly mentioned. So is it typically founders, early employees, or other investors?
Yeah, it is for, I would say, 70-80% of the transactions. It's with founders or early investors. So you could say friends, fools, and families, and the founders are the ones that we are transacting with that was been there when the company started. Later on here, we have also transaction with, you can say, funds that is running out of time. You can say when the portfolio is running out of, they have to close down the fund and they have some companies left over. And then we can have a look at the companies that they have left over. And if there are some interesting companies there, then we can do the transaction. So we have done, you can say, all these three things we have done, but mostly it is founders and early investors.
Got it. And is there a typical stage, you know, when these sort of transactions are taking place? Is it usually around Series A or kind of?
The company has to have had a Series A funding before we even look at it. And that's because we don't do valuations ourselves. We always take the latest valuations of the companies that they have had in regards to capital allocation. And we need to have professional investors that set that valuation. So when the company has done a Series A, then they might be ready to sell some secondaries in the company. And in the portfolio, we have companies from Series A and up to, you could say, pre-IPO companies. But we typically do Series A, Series B. That's typically for the transactions that we do. And we can do it either, you can say, when they are doing the round together with the primaries, or what we also can do is in between rounds. So it doesn't matter for us if it's 2 years ago that they, since they have had a Series A, then if somebody wants to sell, then we can go in and do our work.
Got it. Got it. Makes sense. And is there any like industry or sector focus? You know, if not for the fund specifically, any kind of areas that you're personally kind of excited about?
Not the fund, but we have, you can say, a mandate that we can invest in the Nordics and in the Baltics. So that's our focus, you can say. We have everything from, you can say, deep tech companies to, you can say, companies that are focusing on selling things, robots, office equipment, and so on. So it's quite agnostic in regards to sector. What we should be able to see is a company that can grow 3 to 5 times where they are now in a 3 to 5 year period. Then they get interested for us. And then we have, you can say, in the fund, we also have, because of diversification, we can only invest 10% of the fund in one company, and we can only own 10% of the company. So so we diversify both in geography, in companies.
Mm-hmm. And once you've invested in a company, are you also working with them afterwards in kind of an advisory capacity, or do you ever take kind of board seats or anything like that?
We started out as being, you can say, a passive investor. That was our idea, because we only take minority stakes in the companies up to 10%, as I said. So we wanted to be, you can say, a passive investor. But it turns out that due to our, you can say, good network in the industry, investment industry, and also with partnerships, we have helped, or we have worked a lot with our portfolio companies, both on the partnership side and also when they do raise new primary capital. So we don't take board seats. Only if the company are in trouble, then we might be able to go in and help on the board side. But typically we help on the advisory side. So I would say that we were going from being, you could say, assuming that we should be a passive investor, and now we're working a lot with the companies or the beneficial of both us and them.
Got it. Makes sense. Yeah, I'm sure it's definitely a big help for them to have, you know, people like yourself and Peter and kind of the access to your network. So yeah, I can really see why that would add a lot of value for you know, for the companies. And so, are people typically approaching you, or are you kind of actively going out there sourcing deals? Do you have a team kind of working on that? Like, how do you keep a regular deal flow?
And that's also something that has developed, because you could say in the first fund, which was the 50 million euro fund, we got a lot of inbound interest, also because we were the new kids on the block. So everybody wanted to, right, to see what it is. So we got a lot of inbound interest in the beginning in the first fund. And now that we have a bigger fund and also bigger ticket sizes in the fund, then we also do, you can say, active following up on companies that have had a Series A, Series B, Series C round, and reach out for them, out to them, to see if there's some secondaries for sale. And still, I would say that the market is, in regards to secondaries, is quite immature. There are some local companies or founders or investors, early investors, who don't know what secondaries is. So when we, you can say, get in touch, everybody wants to talk, and then they can see the value of actually getting a cleaned up cap table or getting some liquidity out, so we can get happy, you can say, as we say, happy founders, happy investors. So when the founders get some liquidity and can live the lives with the loved ones that they want, instead of actually only working for a small salary and a big upside in the future, they can actually get some liquidity now and still have a big upside in the future. So it really gets happy founders and happy, hopefully also happy investors. But to answer your question, a lot of you can say, maybe 50-50 now is inbound and our us reaching out and using the different databases to see who has actually raised capital in our region.
Got it. Makes sense. And yeah, I'd just like to dive a bit deeper into that specific part about having happy founders, or, you know, having founders that, you know, are financially comfortable, financially free. I imagine this could be a point that, you know, some people may have a different point of view or a kind of misconception about it. And maybe if a founder takes money off the table, maybe they're going to be sort of less incentivized. They may feel like, you know, they've cashed out now and, you know, be less kind of motivated. So yeah, I'd love to kind of explore a little bit more about that and kind of how you and sort of the fund kind of think about that.
There's one thing we don't do. If a founder comes to us and say, I have a 10% stake in my company that I founded 10 years ago, do you want to buy 9% of those? Then we say, please find somebody else. We are not interested in that, because then the founder is actually checking out. What we're looking for is companies where the founders has worked their ass off and has a very nice company now. They might have, you can say, 20, 25, 30% still ownership of the company. With the valuation that they have, then they for 1 million euros or something like that, so that they cannot live, you can say, happy life forever with the money that they get out of that transaction, then they might sell 1, 2, 3% to us. And then there might be some other who also sells a bit to us and get some liquidity out. So the founders actually get liquidity enough to, have a good life with the loved ones, as I said, but they still have a huge upside in the company. So they get even more happy, you could say, after the transaction, because now they are safe home and they can work their ass off to, you can say, realize the rest of the 25% that they have in love. And that's the way we do it. We don't make founders independent, you can say, of money with our transactions.
By keeping a nice balance of having the founders happy, but also everyone's kind of incentivized, and it's kind of a win-win for everybody. That makes a lot of sense.
Just another comment. We also buy, you could say, for early investors like myself and other friends, tools and families, as I said. And then they might have bought, you can say, one share for one euro. Now this share is 100 euro worth with the new capital raise. Then we need to have a discount, you can say, on that, because we bring liquidity out of the company. And then they might want to sell at, let's say, 75 euros per share. Then they have made, you can say, a huge, a very nice investment. Then they get liquidity out, and then they can put, you can say, that money into 10 other or 10 new startups. So it's quite good for, you can say, early investors that they can actually get their return on the investments before waiting onto an IPO or a trade sale. And then they can actually put the money out, some of the money out in the ecosystem again. So that's a benefit for the early investor.
Yeah, definitely. Amazing. And so you mentioned earlier that you never write checks as kind of a primary investor. Why secondaries sort of in the first place? Is it mainly that discount that you just kind of alluded to, or kind of any other, you know, things that make this particularly attractive?
I think being a founder myself, I know what situations founders are in, the lack of liquidity in the private life and working their ass off in the companies. And that's what we wanted to help with, you can say. And that's what we can do with secondary. And then we, Peter and I, we believe in focus. So if we were both a primary and a secondary, you can say, fund, then where is our focus when we go into a new invest? Is it, you can say, to get the best valuation on the primaries, or is it to get the best yield on the secondaries? And then we decided to be, you can say, focused on the secondaries. And then there is somebody who's actually focused and very good at doing primaries. So that's why. And then we are not, you can say, The discount is just, you can say, an add-on for being in the secondary market, because we bring liquidity, as I've said a couple of times, we bring liquidity out of the companies to some people that can actually use it now instead of waiting 10, 15 years on getting that liquidity. meaning that, of course, we should have a discount on that. And that's just, you can say, the nature of secondaries. We don't invest. We do our due diligence in exactly the same way as if we had to do primaries in the company. So we don't, it doesn't depend on what the discount is. If we don't like the company, they can have a discount of 90%. We don't invest. If it's a nice company, they can have a discount of 10%, and then we want to invest. So it doesn't depend on the discount. It's the company and the team.
Yeah. That obviously, that makes sense. And when you've been kind of working with these founders, or, you know, having discussions, early discussions, have you ever found any kind of misconceptions about equity, or anything that you've been surprised that the founders don't always understand about, you know, the shares that they have?
Yeah. And that's one of the things that we also learned today, is that there are typically different share classes in a company, starting with the common shares. And when we start the company, it's typically common shares that we got. And then you get, you can say, capital into the company, which might be A, B, C rounds. And there might be some preferences, some saves, some a lot of things that they put on, you can say, new rounds. That means that the common shares that we started with might not have the same value as the Series A shares or Series B shares or the pref shares that we did in the Series A round. And that has surprised a lot of, you can say, early investors and also founders, that giving away, you can say, something that seems like not dangerous, like preferences, might devalue your common shares a lot. We have actually seen companies where they thought that the common shares was almost the same worth, had the same value as the latest pref shares, but the value was actually more than 50% lower on the common shares if we were selling at the current valuation of the company. And we were actually trying to you can see, write a book around that, because you have to take care of your early investors also when you do later on, also as a primary investor.
Awesome. Great. Any thoughts on, sort of overall thoughts on the investment landscape in Europe at the moment? Obviously, it's quite a difficult time, you know, compared to, you know, maybe last year. Any advice to founders trying to raise during this climate?
I'm not an expert in markets like that, but I think what we see is actually a lot of companies doing, you can say, bridge rounds now, because nobody wants actually to have a look at what should the valuation of this company be. So we postpone, you can say, the valuation discussion by doing a bridge round or convertible note or things like that in the companies. Now, for us as a secondary fund, that's not nice and that's not good, because we like the companies to be valued or set a value on the company. But for the company, it might be a good way of actually getting some money in without taking the valuation discussion right now. It is a time where people are looking for liquidity, and what we bring to, you can say, non-liquid assets is actually liquidity. So we see a huge, huge, huge deal flow in our books right now. And also people willing to, you can say, give huge discounts. But as I said, huge discount is not enough for us. We need to see good companies. So there is a lot of focus on liquidity right now. So if you can, as my best advice, which is also the best advice when the market goes the other way around, is that if there is cash on the table, then please take it off the table and make a good business.
Yeah, definitely. And this is quite an interesting one. So what's the most difficult thing about running a secondary fund? You know, what's your biggest challenges? You know, whether that be sort of day to day or long term.
For us people, Peter and I, we decided to be a passive fund, but now we are, you can say, involving ourselves in decisions and helping them on partnerships. As I said, that was the difficult thing, is actually standing on the sideline and looking in. But now we are actually doing something with that. The second thing is, right now, is actually choosing between all the good companies. So it's we have a lot of deal flow, and I would love to have, you can say, a fund that was three times the size that we have right now. because the investment landscape for us is extremely good at the moment. And then it's not a difficult thing, but the good thing is that it may be a difficult thing, but the good thing is that we are educating the market in actually secondaries. And there's a lot of education to be done, both as we talked about in the CR classes, but also in regards to reps and warranties that the founders has to give us, just as they do when they do primary investments. Also in regards to the value of actually having a secondary fund on the cap table instead of 100 early stage investors.
It makes sense. And I think you touched on this earlier, but just to expand a little bit. So you're currently only investing in the Nordics. Is the plans to expand?
We reinvest in the Nordics and in the Baltics, because Peter has a huge US network in the Baltics. And then we, in fund number two, has done, you can say, a pocket of 10% of the fund. We can actually do that, invest that out of our region. So we can actually do that. The French company comes and we can actually do an investment in the French company. What we are actually currently discussing is how to, you can say, expand Nordic secondary fund into Europe and maybe also into the US. And we've got a lot of inbound interest in actually copying our concept to different countries. So we've got inbound interest from France, Germany, Italy, the UK. And we're currently now discussing in how to actually do that. Should we team up with teams there, or should we ourselves go into those markets? But I think the most important thing about running a secondary is that you need to have a good network in the area where you're actually investing.
Right.
Because you have to talk to the founders of the companies. And it's not a natural step to, you can say, actually, as it is to when you're doing a capital increase, to call a venture fund. It's not a natural thing to call a secondary fund and say, do we want to buy some of my shares? And so we need to know, you can say, the companies and the founders.
Yeah, it makes sense. And any interesting stories that you have from kind of any of your portfolio companies or investments? You know, it could be success stories, big failures, any just funny anecdotes.
There's a lot of those actually, but one, well, we'd say the first investment that we did was actually in Klarna. And why did we do an investment in Klarna? Everybody says, how could you actually get into Klarna? But the funny thing was that there was an early employee in Klarna. He had some warrants in the company. He went to Denmark and got a job at Pleo. I don't know if you know Pleo, but that's a successful Danish company where I'm an investor in. So Jeppe, the founder of Pleo, he said, please go to Frank. He has a secondary fund, so you can actually sell your warrants or your shares in Klarna, and then you can buy the apartment that you want in Copenhagen. He went to us. We did an agreement with him. He bought his apartment, and they loved that apartment, and we got the Klarna shares. And Klarna was a good paper at that time. And then, 1.5 years later or something like that, a family office came and wanted to buy our Klarna shares. So in 1.5 year, we actually did 5x on that investment. That was only due to, you can say, network. So that tells a lot about the network effect on the secondary market. And then
the first investment.
Yeah, that was actually the first investment. Yeah,
great.
And then we have had some. We've been lucky also. We've done in fund number one. In year one, we actually did 4 exits. In the portfolio that we had, and one of them was actually just in, we bought some shares in a company called Actimo, and 2 days after we have signed with the founder, Kahoot actually came and bought the company. So in 2 days we only had those shares. So in calculating the IRR on that investment would be insane. But the founder was extremely happy because he went into the negotiation with Kahoot with. He was quite calm because now he have actually got some liquidity in his private life. So you can say he didn't need to sell, but he wanted to sell, but he didn't need to sell to Kahoot. So he was also very happy, even though he gave us some discount on the shares that he had.
Yeah, and I guess aside from obviously the monetary side of things, I I guess that's perhaps one of the most rewarding things as well, is seeing that kind of win-win for everybody, and you know, when everybody's happy, and seeing the, you know, the change that you can make in people's lives. Awesome, Frank. Well, anything else we kind of haven't talked about so far that you'd like to share with our audience?
No, I think if anybody, that's a sales talk, but maybe if somebody out there wants to sell secondaries, please give us a call. If somebody wants to explore the opportunities of actually setting up a secondary fund, please give us a call and let's talk about it. And then we're also looking into new products because of the current market, like debt products and those kind of things. So it could be interesting to talk to people who has, you can say, not explored the secondary market before, but wants to know more.
Awesome. Well, yeah, once again, thanks so much for kind of taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us. And yeah, hopefully, you know, we have some people in our audience that, you know, will get in touch and be selling you their shares. But yeah, really appreciate it, Frank. And yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, you too. Thanks a lot for reaching out and having this call.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture, Talent, and Growth. If you found value in this conversation, please leave a review, subscribe, and share this episode with a friend. You can visit bringruckus.com for more ways to connect. And remember, new episodes come out on Tuesday.